again. In fact, it took him a good half an hour more to rejoin the NCOP meeting. So what I'm suggesting is, unless there's a specific rule against it, who would have thought COVID would come? I can't imagine there's any rule. I second his name, but I also suggest that I'm going through the whole rigmarole again. If it's acceptable to everybody and yourself as representing the committee section, that if he gets cut off beyond his control, that we have a deputy chairperson, and although Zolani couldn't even think of nominating me, I do him the gracious reply by saying that if Mr. Injudge is cut off, I would like to suggest that the Honorable Ntiva be the acting chair until Mr. Njadu joins us. Otherwise, Mr. Ntiva can continue to chair till the end of the meeting. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair President. If I may comment earlier on, about what happened this morning. So I am sorry about that experience. With respect to what you have suggested now, I don't think there is no problem, Chair President. This is the meeting of this committee. This committee can decide how this meeting should be handled post this session. So what you are suggesting is perfect, because I mean we are dealing with technology. Better to have than be. And it's better that the put it planned and that the committee agreed to it. Take a resolution.
Thank you, Chair. Just one final qualification. This doesn't mean that Nkosi Ntiva, being a traditional leader and having subjects and, or as you would say, people whom he leads, who work in telecom, or the service provider that delivers the Wi-Fi to Mr. Njadu's home, will cut him off after 3 minutes, and then Mr. Ntiva will chair, as long as that qualification.
Thanks, Chair. Chairperson, may I recognize you, Honorable Ryder?
Thank you very, very much. I just wanted to say that I have no objection to Mr. Njadu's nomination. You know, I think the general consensus is anyone except Karim is acceptable. So, and I think Mr. Ntiva, if needs to be, if he can step in, whatever, we'd be quite happy with that. Thank you.
I'll get you next week, Dennis, on Tuesday.
Thank you, members. Members, I take it that there is no member who is to nominate a second name. If then that is the case, may you please allow me to proceed to the next stage and ask Honorable Ndadu if he accepts the nomination.
Thank you very much, Babalo, and good afternoon to all the members. Now nomination accepted, and with the co-chair, Honorable Ntiva. Yeah, I think for anything that may happen. Thank you very much, members. Good afternoon once more. Can we just quickly go to the roll call?
Just before you proceed, Honorable Njadu, let me officially hand over the meeting to you from my side. You may take over your meeting, Honorable Njadu, and chair it. I just want to indicate that, okay, this part will be addressed under the roll call. Thanks. Let me not mention it for now. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. All members are welcomed. And we wish everything to be well organized in terms of the funeral, and I did spoke to her this morning, and as on the committee to pass our condolences. Then going to the meeting agenda is that we will then go to the roll call for on the members present in the meeting. Or any apologies?
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, as I indicated earlier on, we have the apology from Chairperson Masangu. So that's the only apology from the committee. Also, Chair, we have invited the provinces, provincial chairpersons and their committees to join this meeting. There are two provinces which have submitted apologies, Eastern Cape and Northern Cape. I understand that Gauteng may be in and out because this meeting is clashing with other meetings that are happening in the provincial legislature, chairperson. So except that, Chair, I don't have any apologies from the Chair. And I take that the chairpersons who are present from provinces will speak for themselves. They are in the meeting. Over to you, Chair. Thank you. Hello, Chair. Looks like we have a challenge. Hello, members.
I think it's Mr. Mkiva that must be up now. See? Yeah.
We're in a meeting.
Chairperson. Yeah, that being the case, then, if Mr. Njatu has disconnected, let's take the first presentation from National Treasury.
Acting Chair, can I comment on the latter matter? Gauteng is in the meeting. We're done with our earlier meeting as suggested in the apologies, Chair. This is Chairperson Mpisi.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Comrade Mpisi. Thank you for that.
Thank you very much.
Can we then allow the National Treasury to make the first presentation as itemized on the agenda? Over to you, National Treasury. Just do your introduction, the person who's going to be leading us. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Chairperson and honorable members. Good afternoon. My name is Mamfo Modise, and I'm leading the delegation that will be looking at the Division of Revenue. We have four speakers today. Chairperson, hopefully you'll give us time to go through the presentation. Wendy will start, Litipa will follow Bongani as well as Betu. Without wasting time, may I please ask with your permission, Chairperson Wendy, to come in and start with the presentation. Thank you.
Yeah, can go ahead, please. Thank you.
Thank you very much. This gives you an outline of the presentation, so we've got various aspects that we're going to deal with respect to various presenters as well. Next slide, please. Okay, what is very important is we need to see the 2021 MTF Division of Revenue into context, there are large reductions made to both the national and provincial allocations due to the wage freeze that's been introduced in 2019-20, and it's been 2020-21, and it's going to be continued into the MTF as well. What is important here is that it's largely the reduction in the salaries because of the wage freeze. And we need to keep that in mind as well when we look at the allocations. For example, if you look at the equitable share for provinces, you could see that the amount reduces by 205.9 billion over the MTF, but the allocations still grow at a marginal rate, 0.8%, despite this reduction that's been made. Back to the next slide, please. And the majority of the reduction has got to do with the wage freeze, and 85% of the PEST reductions can be attributed to that. And in the next slide, I'll go in a bit more detail on what we propose be done by provinces, but also municipalities to deal with the reductions in the budget that's been allocated. There's also a reduction in the local government equitable share. And if you again look at the column, you could see that the equitable share for local government still grows at a 4.4%. So it is still a substantial growth rate, for example, if you compare it against the other spheres of government, and the conditional grants also grow at 7.3% for local government and for provinces at 4.6%. And the reason why these conditional grants grow faster or than the equitable share is an acknowledgement that infrastructure and infrastructure development supports economic growth and development. So as far as possible, the infrastructure grants have been protected. The reductions largely focused on cases where they were underspending. And then what was also done to protect very critical programs that cannot be scaled down without having adverse impact on service delivery, such as the school nutrition programs, those reductions were then placed on other areas so that those programs could be protected. And of course, given that we're still facing COVID-19 as well, the MTF also takes into account the need for COVID-related expenditure, and also allowing some of the provisions that were introduced in 2020, such as amending the conditional grant frameworks to allow for spending on COVID-related expenditure, is continued in the 21 MTF. Next slide. What this slide indicates is that the equitable shares and also the conditional grants that go to provinces and municipalities have got a very strong redistributive effect. That means that a rural province will get a larger per capita allocation than an urban province, and metropolitan municipality will get a smaller per household allocation than the rural municipality. If you look at the left-hand side, it indicates, for example, if you compare the Eastern Cape allocation, you could see that the equitable share is 10.1 per capita and the conditional grant is 2. But if you look then at Gauteng, you could see it's a smaller amount, 7.2%, and then 1.6. And the same with regard to the allocations that's going to metropolitan municipalities versus the more rural municipalities. So you can see on the right-hand graph that rural municipalities get about 3 times more than what a metropolitan household will get. And that acknowledges the fact that metropolitan municipalities have got a much larger capability to collect own revenues, because there's a strong correlation between the ability to collect own revenues and economic activity. Next slide. Next slide. Okay, what this slide indicates, and it was also presented as part of the fiscal framework, and of course it resulted also in a lot of discussion on the fiscal framework, and it's got implications for the division of revenue as well, particularly if you look at the allocations or the reductions made to the provincial equitable share. If you look at the left-hand graph, you could see the red bar shows the compensation, and the graph next to it, the gray one, shows the nominal GDP. And if you look at the first two graphs of bars, it indicates that the red bar is smaller than the gray bar. But if you then look from 2004 onwards, you could see that the compensation is much larger than the nominal GDP. And what is needed is for that to bring it under control. The same is shown in the right-hand bar. It shows that the average public service remuneration has grown much faster than the per capita GDP. And it is something that we need to reverse, because if we don't, then in the end it means that everything will be spent on salaries and no more money will be made available for social grants or for service delivery, which could be very detrimental to the fiscal framework and also service delivery. And the table below also indicates is that government employees on average are paid much more than the private sector. And that is also a trend that needs to be reversed. Next slide. Then what is also important is that focusing that we now need to do more with less, there are great opportunities to be explored. In addition to curtailing the wage bill, we can also look at how can we have better and do more efficient spending in provinces and municipalities. And a number of expenditure reviews or spending reviews have already been undertaken. And if those results of those spending reviews are taken into account, it means that we can actually have large cost savings going forward, and it means you can do more with less. For example, if you look at the HIV/AIDS grant, the conditional grants, a comparison was done across provinces on how much they spend on unit cost in terms of ART treatment, and it ranged from 2.668 in Mpumalanga to 5.038 in Northern Cape. So you could see the cost ranges are very varying. And it's not necessary to say that the cost must be the same, but the benchmark gives you a very good idea of where potential savings can be secured, because there could also be unique costs that will result in higher expenditure in some provinces than others. But the range is huge. And it will be very difficult to account that this is just because of locational differences. Then managing overtime is also another area that's been identified, and you need to get the right balance between overtime payments and also adding additional staff and the cost implications for that, because overtime payments are generally more or could be more than if what you just appoint additional staff. So that's another area that provinces can focus on. Again, another area where there's potential for cost savings are goods and services, and procurement reforms there could also be very important. And then also goods and services, another area that you can actually have some savings as well. Next slide. Then a critical area as well is to build operational and technical capacities in provinces and municipalities. And the Government Technical Advisory Centre, or GTAC as we often refer to it, has done quite a bit to assist provincial officials as well to start undertaking the spending reviews and train them on how to undertake these spending reviews. So what has been done on national level can then also be replicated on the provincial level. This will result also again in ensuring efficiencies and effectiveness in service delivery. Also important, the infrastructure delivery management system, again, is put in place to enable better and better quality spending on infrastructure. Next slide. Another area that should be focused on, where substantial efficiencies and effectiveness need to be focused on, and that is COE management. And what is quite key here is to manage the numbers downwards in such a way that it does not impact on service delivery. So in addition to using tools such as natural attrition, that is where people leave the system by themselves, getting jobs elsewhere, for example, other tools could also be explored, such as early retirement, where such positions can then be filled with younger staff, for example, that will cost less. But also where there's vacancies identified, those positions that priority be focused on to be filled, and that the functions or personnel that's not really linked to service delivery, that those posts, for example, be abolished going forward. But what will we also be very critical in the process is that what we've also noticed that the ratios in terms of how much a province spent on personnel vary quite substantially across provinces as well, where, for example, in certain cases, it will be 80% of the budget will be spent on personnel, and other provinces it will, for example, be 70%. And again, provinces need to put expenditure ceilings in place as part of their budget process, so that sufficient money is still available for service delivery. Because in order to provide services, you need to have the tools available also to provide those services. Next slide. And then again, an area that requires quite substantial reform is on the area of procurement. We've got old historical ways of doing procurement, and what is quite important is to modernize the systems that's currently in place. And National Treasury is working together with the provincial treasuries to assist them by using IT and other technologies to improve procurement processes. Next slide. And then what is quite key is that there are key factors affecting sustainability, and there are ones that specifically at national and provincial level, that is resulting, if these are not implemented, that results in impacting on service delivery and also the sustainability of provinces and municipalities. And if we deal with the issues that's listed on this list, such for example, unfunded budgets, poor budget implementation, and these get addressed, you will see improved financial sustainability, for example, in municipalities as well. On the provincial side, use of, for example, readily available information, putting in place early warning systems would also help to improve oversight over local government and then result in improved support to municipalities. Next slide. And what is quite important is there's not just one response that will change the viability or sustainability both at the provincial sphere and also the municipal sphere, but a multi-pronged response are needed from multiple stakeholders. And the first and foremost is to have an enabling political environment that supports these reforms. And what is also then required is strengthened collaboration between the various stakeholders, improved capacity, support and intervention, a stronger financial management responses when something goes wrong, an improved regulatory response when something goes wrong, and also improved policy response. And these must all be done concurrently, because just focusing on one of these interventions won't have the necessary reforms that we're looking forward to. Next slide. I will now hand over to Bongani Dalka that will take you through the provincial allocations and how it changes over the 2021 MTF. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair, honourable members and colleagues. I will be presenting on the provincial slides. In terms of the provincial allocations, the conditional grants are growing at a faster annual rate than the equitable share. And conditional grants are growing at 4.6%, while the equitable provincial equitable share is growing at 0.8%. And this is as a result of, to some extent, the COE reduction that Wendy has already talked to. Also, it should be noted that for the provincial allocations, about 82% of the allocations go through the provincial equitable share. And in terms of the allocations for the 2020-21-22 financial year, about 524 billion is allocated through the equitable share, and the total allocations to provinces are about 639 billion. Next slide, please. In terms of the provincial equitable share, the provincial equitable share consists of six components that account for the relative demand of service. And it also takes into consideration the changes to the demographics in the provinces. And in terms of the formula, it gets updated annually. And some of the updates that were done for the current cycle to update the equitable share with the 2020 mid-year population estimates, where it updates for the population and the age cohort, and also this data we get from StatsSA, and also we update with the low-risk data for the education component. This data we get from the Department of Basic Education. And the committee should also note that we updated the provincial equitable share with the 2018 general household survey data for medical coverage. And this is because the 2019 general household survey was not available at the time of determining this equitable share. And also to update the committee in terms of the progress in terms of the review of the provincial equitable share. The committee should note that in terms of the education component, the we have faced in the school age going, like number of students who are of age school going. Initially, what happened was that we were using the 2021 census data, but from this year, we are fully using the mid-year population estimates, and the phase-in was done for over the past 3 years. And also, the committee should know that we previously have moved away from using the SNAP survey to using the LORIS. That allows us to track the students even when they change schools. And also, in terms of for continuous reviewing of the provincial equitable share, in terms of the health component, we recently acquired data that is going to assist us in terms of reviewing of the risk adjustment capacitation index. Next slide, please. In terms of this slide, what we are showing to the committee are the changes that have happened since the tabling of the 2020 medium-term budget policy statement. In order to respond to the COVID-19, 8 billion has been added to the provincial equitable share in the first year of the MTEF, 2021 MTEF. And this is to allow for provinces to respond to COVID-19 and any subsequent waves that may occur. By adding this money through the equitable share, we are giving the provinces the flexibility to respond without putting any restrictions in terms of, because we don't know even the shape that the subsequent waves may take, so we don't want to limit their ability to respond. Moreover, we have added about 2.4 billion to the COVID-19 component that was created during the special adjustment budget last year, whereby the 2.4 billion is made up of about 1.5 billion in the first year of the MTEF and 900 million in the second year of the MTEF. And this money is added to the HIV, TB, malaria, and community outreach program. And this money is to assist provinces to roll out the COVID-19 vaccine. So in terms of the other changes that have happened, there is 140 million that has been shifted to the human resource and training grant. This is to augment the funds that are going to be used for the hiring of the medical interns as a shortage was identified in that grant. And also, in terms of during the MTBPS, the reductions that were done to COE for provinces were mainly done on the provincial equitable share. However, it has since been decided that for conditional grants that also carry the COE component, that the share of the COE reduction should be shifted to those conditional grants. As a result of that, about 1.7 billion in the first year of the MTEF and about 2.1 billion in the second year of the MTF, those reductions to COE have been shifted to the conditional grant. Next slide, please. Okay. In terms of this slide, we are communicating to the committee that before we came to the committee to indicate that we have created a component within the Human Settlements Development Grant, and that we wanted to see how that component performs, and given the lessons from that component, establish a standalone grant. From the 2021-22 financial year, there is a standalone grant for the informal settlements upgrading called the Informal Settlements Upgrading Partnership Grant. And this grant has been created so that dedicated funding can be available to upgrade informal settlements in situ. Because previously, when this funding was within the Human Settlements Development Grant, the upgrading of the informal settlements in situ was not done to a level that was desired. Hence, the decision to have this dedicated funding. However, the committee should note that the Human Settlements Development Grant is still allowed to respond to upgrading of informal settlements over and above this dedicated standalone grant. And the other thing that we want to indicate to the committee is that the Title Deeds Restoration Grant has been incorporated back into the Human Settlements Development Grant to continue with the registration of the title deed. This is because previously this grant was created to eradicate the backlogs in the registration of the title deed. However, it is from the beginning of the coming financial year, 2021-22, it will be incorporated back into the HSDG. Thank you very much, committee members. I'll hand over to my colleague, Letsepa.
Thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity. Good afternoon, honorable members and colleagues. My name is Letsepa Bagis. I'm the director that is responsible for the local government fiscal framework. I will be taking you through the transfers to local government. As you can see in this table, I don't think I'm going to elaborate more on the equitable shares, as that one has been mentioned in the introductory slides. But my next slide will really just show the impact of the reduction on the equitable share. In terms of the, sorry, Luvavalo, can you go back to the previous slide? Yes, in terms of this one, I'll only focus on the conditional grants. We've already indicated an incredible a growth rate there over the MTF of 7.3%. And I think this is after a reduction of about 2 billion has been made in the local government conditional grants. And that reduction was mainly on the municipal infrastructure grant, which mainly is being reprioritized to fund the non-returning councillors after the local government elections. There's also other reductions that were made, which amount to 1.2 billion over the MTF, and those were really made from the PTNG, the Public Transport Network Grant, which really has underspent over the last couple of years, with only six of the 13 municipalities that received it that really have been able to actually have those in place. In the next slide, we show the impact of the reduction.
in the equitable share. So the honourable members will be aware of the local government equitable share formula, the main components there, with the biggest being the free basic services, which assist municipalities to provide the basic services like water, electricity, sanitation, and refuse removal. So the biggest chunk there, which is 79%, is allocated to that component. And then the other two components, which is your institutional component as well as the community component, are the ones that really fund, you know, the redistributive effect of the formula. And although we typically, you know, allocate 100% of the households, poor households that fall below the threshold, we're unable to do that in this budget because of the reduction. And because of that, you know, we have had to actually provide this subsidy to a lesser number of households, which is still high because it's 96% in the first year. And this we did in order to be able to fund your most rural of the municipalities, whose actually main allocation come from the institutional and the community services, because we're seeing a trend where poverty is urbanizing, and because the funds follow the function, therefore the most of the funds will then go to your metros. And if we didn't do this, the most rural would have been impacted. So when we applied, you know, all the updates to the formula using the approved general households survey data from StatsSA, as well as looking at the latest approved numbers from NERSA and the average increases from the water board, that becomes the impact. In the next slide, honorable members, we show the changes to conditional grants here. With your permission, Chair, I would like not to speak to the informal settlement upgrading partnership grant, because the similar approach that Bongani explained is the same here. It's just that this one goes to the metros, but it's also, you know, it was also tested in the human in the USDG, and now this dedicated funding should be able to assist the metros to provide the bulk services that they need to provide in terms of informal settlements. In the next one, honorable Chair, we used to have, we used to have a grant. We called it the Integrated City Development Grant, and now it has changed its name to a Program and Project Preparation Support Grant. And this grant basically has been repurposed to focus on providing a project and a program preparation, hence the name change. And also, it was also piloted in the current financial year, and now in the next year it will be fully implemented as such. The honourable members will note that the issue of maintenance at a municipal level is still a big problem, and as a result of numerous discussions with NISA, SALCA, DCOC, as well as other sector departments, we've then decided to focus on this matter, but to begin by creating more like a buffer, which is about 5% of the municipality's allocation for the municipal infrastructure grant, will then be used from the next financial year to fund or to develop infrastructure asset management plans. And this is just a start, because there are ongoing discussions that we're having that were mandated by the budget forum Lekgotla, where we're looking at the whole asset management value chain. We anticipate that we should be able to have a way forward when we come back in the midterm budget. Other recommendations that come from the budget forum, the whole slide, we can move to the next slide. Yes, it includes, you know, a more rigorous approach, you know, in terms of how enforcement of legislation happens, you know, where actually we need to start seeing consequence management, you know, at municipal level, doing away with unfunded budgets and all this. There's also an agreement at that level that there is a need to manage the risk of the local government election. The experience here and the observed research is that there is a culture of non-payment in terms of at this time when municipalities would not enforce the credit controls to the maximum because it's an election year. So we're saying at a political level, it must be clear. We must speak with one voice in terms of trying to assist municipalities to recover or to recoup, you know, the revenues that they are being owed. Another game changer is an agreement that all spheres of government need to collaborate to ensure that Eskom actually signs the service delivery agreement. And it's reported by the municipalities that the most important lever that is available to them in terms of actually being able to enforce the collection of revenues from the households and businesses is actually the use of electricity as a credit control measure. So Eskom needs to come on board and assist us in terms of that. There are other mitigating strategies then, Chair and Honourable Members, you know, that are being expedited to assist, you know, in mitigating the reductions so that they don't impact service delivery on the ground. And a number of these reforms, you know, would include on the revenue side, National Treasury's efforts where the revenue advisors will train the provincial treasuries on municipal revenue enhancement initiatives. These will help municipalities to set your cost reflective and improve revenue collection. Then on the expenditure side, though, you know, municipalities are expected to compensate for some of the impacts of the reduction by improving efficiencies. And a good example there to start would have been, you know, not agreeing on an unaffordable, you know, wage agreement such as the one, you know, that was signed and implemented by some municipalities in July, which would cost the municipalities in the region of 6.25%. So those measures really would assist municipalities to be able to, you know, to afford to deal with the cut. And I must add, Chair, that even though we're not finding the full number of poor households, you know, even the municipalities had not reached the level at which we were funding those households. We're still seeing a large number of, or a huge portion of the budget being spent on compensation and also maintaining a big administrations of the municipalities. And there's a paper there that was presented in the budget forum, the Khotla, which really speaks to that, which shows that actually the municipalities don't have the fit for purpose organizational structures. A lot of money that could be redirected to service delivery is actually servicing the large municipal inward components. You know, and the DCOC has affirmed its efforts there, and they will be assisting municipalities in the short and medium term to actually have those fit for purpose organizational structures. They also, the levers that we have then, Chair, in order to assist the municipalities to ensure that those that are less capacitated are able to be assisted if a district within that municipality is actually capacitated to be able to deal with actually assisting that municipality. So funds would then be given to a district that would be able to assist the local within its jurisdiction. So there are a number of conversations that we have with COGTA in that regard, especially in identifying those strong districts that would be able to assist in that. And this, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, is linked to the district development model. which, you know, to this end, the municipal systems improvement grant scope has been extended to fund a comprehensive institutional diagnosis assessment of the 21 district areas with the water, which are water service authorities. These should assist in ensuring that actually, you know, we implement the district development model, and they are able to assist the locals within them. In essence, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, you know, these interventions will unlock, you know, major investments and create employment. It is anticipated that, you know, this will result in several households being able to pay their municipal services, and this will also assist the municipalities to get better in terms of the where they are in terms of their finances, but it will also assist the fiscals which is currently struggling. With all that, I thank you for my side.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, honourable members. I am Zetu in the Intergovernmental Policy and Planning Chief Directorate at the Treasury. I'll be taking you through the changes to the Division of Revenue Board clauses, followed by a summary of the responses to the recommendations made by the Financial and Fiscal Commission on the 2021 Division of Revenue. This slide covers two policy adjustments that are made in 2021. The first one is the replacement of all reference to declared disasters as a sort of a condition for the release of the funds, or as a trigger for the release of funds with classified disasters. This is intended to better align with the requirements in the Disaster Management Act, particularly around the designation of primary responsibility for coordinating and managing a disaster. This will also allow the NDMC to quickly respond to disasters, even in cases where provinces and municipalities, for one other reason, experience delays in declaring their disasters. A second is the omission of the requirement for the 8 metros to submit both performance and built environment performance plan, BEPS, as a means to access grant funding. This has been an additional planning, budgeting, and reporting requirement for the metros, intended to assist the country meet the spatial transformation objectives as outlined in the National Development Plan. When introduced, the idea was that these, or the BEP reforms, rather, would be incrementally incorporated into longer planning documents. This is the case with the CSP, who has been leading the BEP reforms, along with a number of other stakeholders. They've developed a metro-specific IDP and a assessment framework for this, awaiting approval by the Minister of COGTA. Once this is done, which is anticipated will be the case by the start of the financial year, this will come into full effect. We made a number of other small or technical adjustments. These are attached as an extra presentation. Next slide, please. The responses to the FFC's recommendations contained in the explanatory memo of the Division of Revenue are limited to those that were classified as related to the Division of Revenue in terms of the Intergovernmental Fiscal Relations Act. Those that were classified as unrelated were forwarded to the relevant ministries for them to respond directly to the FFC. This was done last year. The draft responses, next slide, please. The responses as captured in the explanatory memo take account of the inputs that were received from our stakeholders at national and provincial level, and government broadly agrees with these recommendations. The first one there is for the macroeconomic framework to be in line with the president's economic and social support response for to respond to COVID-19. The recommendation had explicitly said that the fiscal provisions for this must be outlined in the money bills. The response notes that this is the case with the fiscal provisions outlined in the Division of Revenue Bill as well as the Appropriation Bill. But in the actual response in the explanatory memo, we speak to the Economic Recovery Plan, briefly touch on the four priority reforms and the structural reforms that will be implemented parallel to this. With these combined, government estimates that we can raise growth to over 3% by 2030 and create over 1 million jobs. As the recovery plan has a focus on capital investment, we also speak to the infrastructure fund. Letsepa has already touched on this. I think it's important to note here that we acknowledge that the implementation of such plans has always been a weakness for government. So to respond to this, the presidency and the National Treasury have set up Operation Vulindlela, which is a joint initiative that has been tasked with speeding up the implementation of the priority reforms. Next slide, please. The second recommendation there is for government to adopt a localized product value chain, which it is proposed, it finds expression in the relevant conditional grants, particularly incentive grants, by limiting the use of grant funds to the procurement of goods that are locally assembled. In principle, government agrees to this. We are all for efforts to address economic barriers and address social inequality. However, noting that the public procurement bill is not yet finalized and there isn't a clear idea of the full range of national, provincial, and municipal provisions. Most importantly, there isn't a preference points framework at the moment. That is fair, competitive, or would allow for ease of administration. So only once these things are in place can we consider making hard conditions on the conditional grants. This is something that might likely be able to be done over the MTF. On the NHI, the recommendation was that government ensures that there is an enabling policy and legislative framework that considers the functions for each sphere, sets appropriate norms and standards, and that once this is rolled out, there be proper oversight of this. Government agrees. And in terms of any fiscal implications for any of the spheres, government will endeavor to ensure that the funds follow function principle is adhered to, and that this is consulted upon through the appropriate intergovernmental forums. Next slide, please. The next recommendation was for government to prioritize all nonprofit and non-center-based ECD programs for infrastructure and registration. The FFC highlighting that the registration process needs to be simplified. The response notes that the Vangalasi campaign, which is led by the Department of Social Development, aims to do this. And part of the funds that were made available in 2020 through the Presidential Employment Initiative have also been used for this purpose and the development of a database of registered and unregistered centers, as well as the practitioners. With respect to prioritizing infrastructure, the SED grant continues to do this for unregistered and conditionally registered ECDs. The fourth layer is for government to spearhead the development of a holistic funding framework to ensure a uniform approach to funding learners with special educational needs. Government agrees, and this is something that the Department of Basic Education is already doing, in the process of doing. Next slide, please. So the FFC made two sort of related recommendations on the provincial equitable share. One was for in the health and education sectors, pursue efforts to cost the norms that have been developed, which would initially be used to determine provincial expenditure or under expenditure, but in the long term be considered for incorporation into the formula. The other was for the formula to be updated to account for higher costs of providing services to vulnerable groups. This was an interesting one. It included accounting for age and gender differences. The response notes that we are in support of using or improving our data-driven allocation methodologies. However, we caution the use of using costed or using actual cost as a basis of allocation, as this could encourage inefficient spending. Also, in the response, we note the limitations of formulas such as the equitable share, in that the expectation that a formula that is supposed to allocate funding fairly and equitably across 9 provinces would ever be able to fully account for the actual costs incurred by each province. What we note here is that as part of the PEST review, the working group is open to engaging with the FSC, because there is scope to consider or quantifiable cost drivers that can be measured fairly and consistently amongst the 9 provinces. The last recommendation there was the creation of an indirect grant to provide support to emerging farmers. Here, we agree that emerging farmers do have the potential to play an important role in driving local economic development and economic growth broadly. However, we do not support the introduction of an indirect grant. There is already funding in the grant system that provides not just funding, but technical support as well. This can be improved, or the use of these funds can be improved. Possibly the introduction of technologies that will make the farmers be more competitive. With direct grants, we feel government is of the view that provinces and municipalities should be allowed to perform their mandated functions. So these should not be bypassed by indirect grants and restrictive ring fencing. That is it for me. Bongani will now come in on the responses to SCO and SECO recommendations. Thanks.
Thank you, Bongani. Welcome.
Good afternoon again, Chairperson, honorable members and colleagues. I will be quick on this slide. For the recommendation of the committees, this is a very highly summarized slide. We want to draw the attention of the committee to the fact that responses in detail are contained in Annex A of the 2021 budget review. So in terms of just presenting to the committee some of the recommendation and the highly summarized responses, that the committee wanted to know the impact of the reductions to the grants that happened. We have referred this recommendation to the relevant departments through the letter from Minister of Finance to the relevant ministers for them to respond directly to the committee, so that they can give proper details of how the grants have been impacted in terms of the service of service delivery. Also, the committee's made a recommendation in terms of the stimulus package for job creation opportunities. With this one, the presidency has developed a very rigorous reporting requirement that requires the beneficiaries, which would be the national departments and the provinces, to report on a monthly basis in terms of the expenditure for this stimulus package. Also, in terms of the recommendation for the rollovers, the rollovers were approved as per the committee's recommendation. So in terms of the finalization of the draft public procurement bill, we do agree with the committees that this should be finalized. However, we also want to note that in terms of this recommendation, the economic recovery plan that was announced by the president largely addresses the recommendation that was made with respect to this public procurement bill. So also in terms of the revenue collection, we want to highlight that the revenue collection is mainly the municipality's responsibility. However, in terms of supporting municipalities in enhancing their revenue collection, both National Treasury and Department of Cooperative Governance, when supporting the municipality, now they are coming through one channel. There is no longer going to be disaggregated support. So municipalities will be assisted. In terms of the reviewing of the provincial equitable share and the local government equitable share, this ones have already been highlighted during the presentation. However, it should be noted that also FFC is part of the task team for reviewing of the provincial equitable share, and they can contribute in that aspect in terms of some of the recommendations that were put forward in terms of the recommendations to the Division of Revenue. Thank you very much, Chairperson and the committee members.
Thank you. Thank you very much to the presenters, Team National Treasury, whereby I, just for the sake of following in terms of who presented, am I audible? Hello?
Yes, yes, you're audible.
Okay. Yes, okay. Yeah, just for the members to follow in terms of the presenters is that we are having Wendy, Litsepa, Bongani, and Zetu in terms of the presenters. So the purpose of today, just to reemphasize, is the 2021 Division of Revenue bill. Briefing from National Treasury. So a lot of, in terms of the presentations have been, it's a very comprehensive presentation, which covered very detailed areas in terms of allocations to provinces, municipalities, departments, types of grants, policy matters, and formulas that are being used. So, and all is for the purpose of service delivery. So I think that is the presentation that we have received, and then that we then will then give now an opportunity for the committee members to ask questions for clarity, to make inputs, and then we'll take it then from there. Thank you very much. Can we get Lubabalo in terms of indication of hands? Who are there?
Okay. So far, Honorable Zatu, we have Honorable Ryder, Honorable Dudoit, and Honorable Moletane.
Thank you very much. Any further hands? Okay, then we'll let then start with the three hands that we have. Honorable Ryder, Honorable Twait, Honorable Molasane, Honorable Ryder.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And yeah, thanks to Treasury for the presentations, as always. Obviously, there's quite a lot to digest in a fairly short time, and many questions already arisen, but many more to come. I'd like to focus first, please, on the allocations to local government. And I note that still it's more or less 9% of DORA that gets allocated to local government. Slightly up, which I think is appreciated, but still questioning if it is enough. And let me focus my question a little bit more. So I posed a written question to the Minister of Finance about the number of municipalities that are currently presenting unfunded budgets to Treasury. And the minister's response actually came back 2 days ago and then was the subject of a newspaper article this morning. But around 40% of municipalities are adopting unfunded budgets. Now, not only is this against the MFMA, possibly problematic because, of course, we all know that a lot of these, a lot of even the funded budgets are made up of kind of Hail Mary estimations of revenue collection, you know, with no basis in history and no basis in fact. You know, municipalities that have historically had collection rates of 40% using 60% collection rates to make their budgets balanced. So the question is that, you know, we keep coming back here every year. Every year we're sending some money across to local government, which is marvelous. But every year we end up with the Auditor General coming in a different part of the cycle and telling us how badly municipalities have done and how things have gone awry there. And we have municipalities responding by saying they've got legacy Eskom bills, they've got legacy water provision bills, bulk water supply bills from the various suppliers that they get from, that they're struggling to catch up with. So what we did last year is we sat in these meetings and we agreed that there would be a nice big lechotla, a budget lechotla with local government, and the issues around the funding of local government would be well ventilated at that budget lechotla, and that there would be some good outcomes. We're here today and I've heard no mention of the outcomes of that budget lechotla. So I'd like to hear, certainly from Treasury's point of view, what happened in the local government budget lechotla, because I think we did ask to be included in that as if not participants, certainly as observers. I know I asked for it. I don't know if the committee formally asked for that. But certainly the way that we're funding local government can't continue like it is. The fact is that local government is spending money badly, and there's no doubt about that. So the money that we are giving them is not always put to best use. But, you know, the whole model of how local government is being funded at the moment is questionable. So I'd like to hear more from Treasury about, you know, what are the outcomes of that local government budget for Kotla, and how we're going to deal with these things going forward, specifically with the large amounts that are owed in terms of legacy debt for the bulk supply of electricity and water. In terms of equitable share, I would like to know, please, where I can find a resource that can tell me more or less how, no, not more or less, tell me exactly how or what variables are included when calculating equitable share. Is it a straight line formula based on population size? Is it the, you know, size of indigent or expected indigent population? Is it based on Stats SA's evaluations or on the municipality's own interpretations and gathering of indigent statistics and registration of people as indigents? If you can give me just an idea where I can find some more information about equitable share, how it's calculated, and exactly what it's meant to be spent on, which leads me to the next question. Is there any monitoring on what equitable share is being spent on? Do we know that it's being used and applied first and foremost
in payment of current bulk services, and then in terms of normal service delivery, or do we have any examples where it's used to buy Mercedes-Benzes or mayoral villas? Is there any monitoring that happens? Is there any way that we can track that sort of thing? Is my next question. Third question, Chair, relates to the 350 Rand grant, the additional grant. I'm not sure it belongs here in this discussion. I think this is more around a different segment of DORA. But just some comments around the extension of the 350 Rand grant. Is that going to be rolled out to provinces, or will that be handled at a national level as well? And then specifically on some of the conditional grants that go to provincial government, a bit more information. So, example, the housing grant, provision of housing, is that going to be changed? We've heard Minister Sisulu in the NCOP telling us that the method of giving people housing opportunities was her word, I think, but of providing housing was going to change, and we were going to move towards more site and service delivery form. Has this been taken into account with the rollout of the budget? Is this something that Treasury has supported, etc.? And then also a little bit more meat, please, on the bones of what's happening on the conditional grants going out to provinces. You know, if you can indicate to us, Health, I see, has had quite a big whack, but how much of that is going to be a direct grant and how much is indirect? That move from direct to indirect has a big role to play in terms of how provinces budget and function. And if we can have an idea, is there, you know, we've seen a bit of a move towards some centralization of power or control from Treasury, certainly when it comes to some of the national department allocations. But, you know, has the same happened with the provincial budget allocations? Is there more happening in terms of grants that will be managed and the rollouts managed by Treasury rather than allocating the funds to the individual provinces to manage? Chair, that's it for now. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Ryder. Honourable Twit.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Honourable Chair, a few questions on page 17, referring to the responding to the COVID-19 and the billions that has been added to the provincial equitable share. What measures are in place to prevent corruption from taking place? Because this was an issue when money was availed the previous time, and it was said that additional measures were to be put in place. If you could just have more information on that. On page 20 of the presentation, if National Treasury could please elaborate on the 3.7% growth for council support. What does that entail? Page 21, how many households in total are making use of the free basic services at this stage, and what was the growth over the past 2 years? Page 24, the unaffordable wage agreements. What is National Treasury's view on municipalities that paid a danger pay or a danger incentive to the employees for working during the hard lockdown 2020 and the beginning of 2021? If I can just have their take on that. And then lastly, page 32, with regards to the different grants made available for emerging farmers, how many different grants, direct and indirect, are available for emerging or upcoming farmers to make use of? Because I know that grants are available from different entities, and like the Development Bank, and obviously the National Treasury has that information, if that could be shared with us as well. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable the Tweet, Honourable Molasane.
Thank you, Chair. Let me first start by welcoming the presentation, and also I want to welcome the progress at last that is happening to review the model that is used for distribution of division of revenue. And one does hope that they will speed up the process especially when one looks at the present model that is used, the little percentage that is given the local government. And at the same time, the very same local government, they are finding themselves in the very difficult situation of this pandemic. So I hope that soon we'll hear good news. One won't comment much until I hear how do they suggest to change, to do the changes. Because honestly speaking, that model is overdue. Looking at the challenges that we are experiencing of now late. So I want to at least just to comment about that for now. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Honorable Moletsane. Yeah, it's a mouthful. I think we will give to Team Treasury to respond, and then we will have then a second round.
Thank you very much. What I'll do is I'll ask Jan to start with some of the local government questions. And then I can also ask Letsepa to go through the one slide that is missed, and that is to give a bit of more details on the outcomes of the Lekgotla that's taken place on local government, and also indicate that that is the first and second Lekgotlas have really taken place, and maybe just highlight the third one that's also in the pipeline. I will deal with the rest of the questions as well. Ulrika, can you also come in, please, on the housing-related issues? So, Jan, can you please start?
Good afternoon, Honourable Chair and members. Thanks for very interesting and tough questions that you have posed to us as a Treasury. My responsibility in the National Treasury Chair is to oversee the budget process in our municipal space, and the issue about funded budget is at the heart of the reform that we're trying to facilitate. So, Chair, when the municipalities tabled and adopted their budgets for the current year that we're busy implementing, there was 106 municipalities that did not table funded budgets. We as a Treasury team finance, ourselves and provincial treasuries, as a practice, Chair, we assess all municipal budgets, the national treasury for the 17 big cities and the provincial treasuries for the rest. That's a service that we have now provided as a standard to all municipalities. The methodology that we've developed, Chair, is essentially to determine whether the budget is funded in terms of Section 18 of the MFMA. Unfortunately, what happens in most of these councils is that they consider the information that being presented by the administration, and they don't necessarily share with our councillors the Treasury's view of the world. Chair, and progressively, the fact that this is now in the public domain is also assisting us to lift the problem. We firmly believe, Chair, if you don't deal with the planning and the budget challenges up front, we will not be in a position, Chair, to resolve the issues that the Auditor General raised. So much of our time and effort has been spent on helping municipalities to approve their planning and their budgeting practices. So, Chair, coincidentally, in this week, we issue two budget circulars. And if the Honourable Member would like to look at that, the circular 108 was issued on the 8th of March. It also talks to the issue about the danger allowance for COVID. Chair, on this matter, SELGA has made a pronouncement, and we've in the budget circular articulated the criteria and what municipalities have to do and to consider before they pay an allowance like that. Our personal view is that we should not entertain this, but this is a bargaining and a SELGA-related matter. So, Chair, they have pronounced that, and we've given our views in the budget circular for municipalities. So, Chair, we have managed to reduce the 106 unfunded budgets to 95, and those municipalities that didn't take our responsibility and our advice seriously, Chair, we have, as agreed at the Budget Council and Budget Forum, delayed the transfer of the equitable share in order to make sure that municipalities start taking this responsibility seriously. Chair, the equitable share is now 9.4%, but I think that the colleagues will share with you, Chair, municipalities, unlike provinces, have extensive tax powers. Now, unfortunately, Chair, we've released the second quarter results on the 3rd of March of the second quarter performance, both financial otherwise, but also in conditional grants. And Chair, you will see in that publication that the debtors amount, outstanding debtors is now standing at 250 billion rand, Chair. Practically what it means, members of this committee, is that municipalities have delivered a service, they've submitted invoices, but they have not collected 250 billion rand of revenue that technically belongs to them. Now, we know there's a part that's historical in nature, but the point is you can't rely on the national fiscus to then finance all your activities if you have extensive tax powers. Chair, as far as the monitoring of the equitable share and what municipalities are doing with that, Chair, I can say with absolute confidence, if you look on our website, there's a spreadsheet where we indicate how the equitable share is calculated, and it's also in the Division of Revenue Bill, Annex W, AW. So again, my colleagues will talk about that. Chair, the point is, if you look practically, you will see municipalities do not use the subsidy that the fiscus make available to translate that into the indigents. So there's a definite mismatch. Chairperson, we have also facilitated the MSCOA reform, and I'm sure the members have heard about the MSCOA reform. But technically what it means, Chair, in the future, we will be able to demonstrate to Parliament per municipality exactly to the cent what municipalities do with the equitable share. Unfortunately, Chair, instead of using that money to take care of the poorest of the poor, municipalities use it to pay creditors because they do not collect their revenue. And this is the 250 billion that I'm referring to, Chair. So, Chair, perhaps we can share the budget circular with the Secretariat as well as the second quarter results that will enable the members to get a feel of the monitoring and oversight that we've institutionalized over the last 12 years. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Jan. My apology that I didn't add you to the team. I hope that I didn't left out any other person, but thank you very much. Can we get, I think the budget circle, you say the budget circle review, I think that's a very important aspect that I think if members could get that will be very important. Can we get further responses?
Certainly, can I then ask, Ulrika to come in with the housing issue and then let's say with the Lokotla issues and also exactly where we can get information on the local government equitable share. So first let's say and then first Ulrika and then let's say thanks.
Thank you, Wendy, and good afternoon, honourable members. So with respect to honourable Ryder's question, the Human Settlements Development Grant pays for a whole range of subsidy instruments within the broader housing program. And the business plans that provinces then put together will then determine you know, which of the various instruments and kind of programs within the broader program department that the sector will prioritize. So in relation to wanting to change track within the broader housing program, the housing code and the housing subsidy policy already has the kind of instruments in place to do, for example, what the informal settlements upgrading partnership grant does in relation to in-situ upgrading for informal settlements. So what I'm trying to say is that the allocations on the human settlements development grant already caters for how provinces decide on how they want to implement any announcements that was made by the minister, because the instruments exist, whether they are kind of project link subsidies and shifting away from broader contractor development programs to individual subsidy programs, the policy framework allows for that, which means the funding can then already be provided to deal with those kind of initiatives, whether they are individual subsidies that are linked to credit or not to credit, whether they're linked to just to kind of sites and services, and whether they are consolidation subsidies. They are all provided for within the broader HSDG framework. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Ulrich. Thank you very much. We can continue further presentations.
Let's step up. If you can put the slide on which shows the outcomes of the budget forum, Lagotla, please.
I can't show already. Okay, I think I've been allowed to do that. Honourable members, let me start with slide 24. In slide 24, it's actually slide 23. Slide 23 really shows the outcomes or the recommendations that came from the budget forum Lekgotla, where matters such as dealing with the risk associated with local government elections, and matters that relate to dealing with the political, the government and political leadership, the interface with administration. So all those matters were dealt with in the first Lekgotla. Then there was a second Lekgotla, Honorable Chair. It's part of the pack as an annexure. So if I can just go there so it's part of the annexure, yeah. So here it was really looking at the whole functional arrangement and as well as the fiscal framework. It was held on the 11th of December, where a number of matters were deliberated on. And as a result, the institutions that participated in this, which were mainly the SALCA, DCOC, as well as the Treasury, all had papers to share. And then the deliberations and the way forward was paved from those discussions. Just to mention a few things that, how the approach in terms of taking the work of the Lekgotla forward, we had, some short-term tasks and programs and activities that we have to do and go back to Lekgotla with as the working groups. So those are divided in terms of the short, the medium, and the long term. So each of the institutions, have something to do there. And it also covered, matters that relate, to the municipal clearance certificate, how those could be expedited and so forth. And now, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, we're actually beginning the work of the third budget forum, the Lekgotla. This one is looking at infrastructure and asset. In fact, the whole asset management value chain, where we're looking at the infrastructure, how it's funded, how it should be funded, the available levers there, as well as the maintenance issue, how then that could be tackled. Because if you tackle the maintenance issue, you are able to prolong the life of an asset, and thereby you know, getting value for money, and that's been a local government's Achilles heel in terms of lack of maintenance. So that is being dealt with in the next budget lekhotla, which we actually deliberating on and preparing papers on. I'm sure the honourable members, if they want to be part of that, they could be invited. In terms of the local government, the Kwita will share in terms of the variables that are there. We explain those in the Division of Revenue Bill in Annexure W1 of it, and we'll be happy to share that with the secretaries of the committee so that they can share it with the members. And we'll also be able to take through the honourable members if they need us to help them go through it. That's it from my side, honourable chair. Thank you for your time.
Maruma, I don't know if you're on the line to could deal with the COVID-related issues.
Thank you, Wendy, and good afternoon to Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I think the question there was, I mean, in relation to the additions that have been made in the...
Maruma, just unmute yourself, please. You've muted yourself.
Oh, sorry. I think somehow it got muted. I was saying that the question there relates to the 8 billion that has been added to the health sector, as well as the issues, I mean, the allegations of corruptions that have been in the media, I mean, since this COVID started. I think, I mean, the way in which I'll answer this question, honorable member, is that the reason why we add this money into the system, I mean, we add this money because we believe that there is a need. In fact, we know that there is a need. I mean, there are health workers, I mean, that are waking up every day going to our health facilities, and some of them working throughout the night to try and look after those that need the health services. And in order for them to do that, I mean, they need the tools of trade. And the tools of trade in this regard is the PPEs, I mean, the masks, et cetera, and so forth. But I think then it becomes unfortunate that, I mean, during the procurement process or the procurement of those PPEs, I mean, there are a whole lot of things that then happens. I mean, that are not really, I mean, that in the public domain. But having said that, I mean, I must indicate that I mean, our office of the OCPO, I mean, the Chief Procurement Office has been really working very hard, I mean, to try and make sure that each province, I mean, start to publish, I mean, in the public domain, some of the contracts that have been awarded that relates to these PPEs, the names of the companies that are receiving these contracts, when those companies have been started, so that I mean everyone I mean will be able to then understand I mean who gets to benefit. So those strategies it's the work that I mean the office has been I mean trying over the years. I mean, over a couple of months, I mean, to try and make sure that government is as transparent as possible, I mean, in terms of having the public understanding who gets to benefit from this contract. But in terms of the money, I think there is a need. I mean, as we've seen, I mean, with the second wave that hit us earlier than expected, and as a result, I mean, some of the provinces, I mean, there were some pressures there, which needed us, I mean, to even, I mean, start to inject this money, I mean, going forward in preparation of the third wave and the fourth wave as well. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll take the last questions after we finish the round robin. I'm the last round robin to take the other questions that's been posed. The question has been asked whether there's a move towards centralization of the provincial conditional grants, and the answer is no. In terms of, and the question most probably also relates to the money that's made available to provinces to respond to COVID. The largest allocation, the 8 billion that's allocated through the provincial equitable share, is made available to provinces directly to deal with any expenditure related to the current second wave and also any consequent waves that we can experience. And then money is also made available to provinces to deal with the vaccine rollout. And that is also a direct grant through the HIV/AIDS grant. But the purchasing of the vaccine, that has been centralized for very obvious reasons. Currently, there's a scarcity in terms of the COVID vaccine, and a worldwide scarcity is being experienced. So it is best for the country to centralize that and try to, through negotiations countrywide, internationally, to also then focus on securing the vaccines that we so dearly need, rather than devolving that to a provincial level. Then the issue was also asked how many conditional grants are in place to respond to the agriculture and emerging farmers, and to advise the committee that there's three conditional grants in place. They're all direct. What that means is that the money goes directly to provinces. An indirect grant is whether the National Department performs a function on behalf of a province or a municipality, so they retain the money and spend the money on behalf of a province or a municipality. In terms of agriculture, there's three direct grants. So the biggest one is what and has also been in place for many, many years is the Comprehensive Agriculture Support Program grant, also often referred to as CASP. That's the biggest grant in place. Then there's also a Lima Letsema Projects Grant, and there's also a Land Care Program Grant, Poverty Relief and Infrastructure Development. And it is the conditional grant frameworks that contain quite a bit of detail on what each grant intends to do is contained in the Division of Revenue Bill under the Provincial Conditional Grant Frameworks. Then another question that's been asked, and hopefully that's the last one. The question about 350 grant that's been extended for another 4 months, and where would it be dealt with? It's similar to the regional allocation of 350 grant that's been managed by National Department. It will be continued to be managed by the National Department, and therefore it's not an issue for the Division of Revenue. That's an issue of the appropriation bill that will be coming to the committee after the Division of Revenue bill has been processed through the NCOP as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Wendy. Are you done?
Thank you very much. Yes, we're done with this round of questions.
Thank you very much, Wendy, and also thank you to also to Marumo, who also was added to the national team at National Treasury. Members, now when I look at time, it's close to 4:45. We will give another round, a second round, which will be the last round. I was also informed that provinces chairpersons was also invited. I will also allow, if there are any of them for any question, we'll also give them an opportunity in this round, because it will be a last round. Then we will give them the last round of questions to members. It's open for members. Any questions?
Thanks very much.
Honorable member.
So much, Chair, for the opportunity. Just one question, and I maybe would be assisted. I think when Mr. Jan Hatting was responding on the non-collection of revenue by municipality,
And I thought you'll give us a reason why there's no collection of revenue by most municipalities in the country, because we know the challenges of some of the local municipalities that we have, the areas which they operate in may not have the capacity to do so, or equally the issue of the economic challenges faced by our people in those areas might be another issue. I thought you will elaborate as to what will be the issue or the advice that they will give to us as provinces to go back to our own provinces and say to our MECs and our HODs who are dealing with COCTA as well as Treasury on how to assist them to collect this revenue, because they are getting their equitable share from provinces, but we don't see the return in terms of them collecting money of the issues that we would have given to them as resources to do their work. I thought Diane would have responded to that. The last one, Chair, is the issue of the grants given to provinces. We know that we are pushing very hard as portfolio committees, particularly in the province, to make sure that the grants given to provinces are being used and are being used for that particular purpose, with not for any other thing. Now, the challenge is, what about those that are not using those grants? Do we continue to give it to them, or what will be the next step going forward? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable MPC. Just for the record, Honorable MPC, you are from what province?
I'm from Gauteng, Chair. I'm chairperson of Finance and the e-government portfolio committee.
Thank you very much, Honorable MPC. Any further questions to members?
Honorable Ryder, chairperson.
Honorable Ryder?
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much, Chair. You know, whenever you ask for questions, my hand goes up automatically. Chair, yes. Just firstly, I'm not going to. I don't want to steal away from Treasury's response to the Honourable MPC, but you know, the fact is there should be no excuse for billing uncollectible debt. Municipalities need to have good indigency policies in place, and to make sure that indigents are correctly recorded, so that the right people are billed. There should be no reason to bill people that we know cannot pay. And that's what an equitable share is there for, in my view. So, but I mean, Treasury will expand, I'm sure. But really, municipalities need to get up to speed with their indigency programs to make sure that you don't have this crazy uncollectible debt that mounts up all over the balance sheets, and then has to be kept there, because otherwise, you know, it changes the liquidity ratios and actually makes balance sheets insolvent. That's a discussion for a whole day, I think. Nonetheless, but Chairperson, I wanted to specifically get back to Ms. Fano's responses, and I want to appreciate the responses. Mr. Hartling, I really enjoyed your responses. Thank you. If I can ask you, please, you mentioned Treasury's website and the fact that equitable shares detail there. Please send us.
Thank you, Honorable Ryder. Can we get any further questions?
Yes. Sorry, did you not hear any of that?
We got you your question, Honorable Ryder.
Ah, okay. And then yes. The last piece, Ms. Fano, just to say that you said that for obvious reasons, provinces are not supposed to be procuring vaccines. And then you kind of listed what you felt were the reasons, which made it more obvious to me that provinces should be permitted to try and procure their own vaccines, because, you know, with the scarcity that one finds, we should not be limiting any procurement. So we should actually open up procurement so that, you know, especially to a province, which is certainly more agile than a national department in terms of what they can do, you know, the timeframes that they have to work with. So, you know, if we can procure vaccines by any means, be it through province, be it through national government, we should be encouraging that for the safety and security of our population. So, you know, we should not be shutting off any taps without first investigating them. Thank you, Chair.
Just maybe I think to be specific on the procurement of the vaccines. Yeah, I think in terms of National Treasury, in terms of the Health Department, I think so that we, as the appropriation, not go into the detail of that, so that we understand maybe from what angle the department is centralizing the procurement of the vaccine. I think all of us will say that we want to curb corruption and all those things. So I think there's a lot of reasons why it's national. So I'm just trying that we look in terms of maybe the presentations that we have received so that we focus on that. Thank you very much. Any further questions?
Yeah, Chair, can I come back? It's Mpisi again.
Yes, Honorable Mpisi.
Not directly responding to Honorable Ryder, who's also from my province. but the issue is that I think you've just answered the national centralization of the vaccine. And I think as the committee, we need not to actually even encourage that debate. We must allow National Treasury and the National Department of Health to do that. And I think so far, they are managing it very well. We know that it might be too slow for others, but I think we'll get there as the country. We would have loved to do that as Gauteng, but I think it is better placed at the national level. I think on the issue of the local government collection of revenue, Chair, I think it's something that we, in as much as Honorable Ryder is correct, that the municipalities must build correctly. But I think we know the conditions on the ground. Worse now that COVID-19 has also created more unemployment in our country. I think it's something that I think we should perhaps directed by national and structures, that we must find a better model to make sure that municipalities can collect revenue, but without closing our eyes on the realities on the ground that are forcing our people not to pay. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable PC. Are there any further hands, Lubabalo?
Yes. Yes, Chairperson, there is Honorable Karim, Chair.
Honorable Karim?
Yes, Chairperson, just a quick thing. I don't want to enter into a long reply to Mr. Ryder, but I think that we should be very guarded about provincializing what is a national and global pandemic. So firstly, as I understand it, unless Treasury suggests otherwise, it's not possible for a provincial or a state in a federal structure, like say the Germany or something, to actually procure from the manufacturers vaccines. From what I gather, they will only give to national governments and national states. So firstly, it seems to be until now, a position of the manufacturers themselves, sensibly in my view. Secondly, from what I can gather, and I could be wrong again, they will know better, the Treasury and others know better to answer these questions or respond to them, that in fact the WHO doesn't encourage this either, but I could be wrong about that. Thirdly, I think one should be guarded against some provinces which are economically better off benefiting by getting their own vaccines, whether they're led by the ANC or any other province, any other party, well, there's only one other party, and others. So, for example, if you look at the socioeconomic profile of Eastern Cape, what would happen to them as against Gauteng? Let's just take that as an example. I mean, Makura and them, the premier there, they can do much more because they're the industrial hub of this country, economic hub. And they have more resources. They're more urbanized, if you like. So Mr. Mpisi and Mr. Ryder, Comrade Mpisi, I mean, and Mr. Ryder will end up with the vaccine. But will Zukisa? Zukisa get the vaccine? Or Zolani Mkiva get the vaccine? They might have the same socio-economic health profile, same comorbidities, but because Gauteng is such a powerful state and province compared to East Cape, it will end up, and then what you will get, understandably, it's not peculiar to South Africa, people are doing this elsewhere, there's the guy that had to resign, isn't it, from the US big pension fund because he flew to the UAE to go and buy a vaccine. It said that Rupert also, our own South African Rupert, did the same, it seems. I don't know if he bought the vaccine or what, but, you know, they went to the UAE. So what I'm saying is we shouldn't encourage this, really. I honestly think it's not really a debate we should encourage. Yes, we must all get the vaccine. Yes, let's put pressure, even as Parliament, even as the Finance Committee Chair. Let's not leave it to the Health Committee. I mean, really, it's our minister that seemed to be hesitant for a while in Treasury. They will present their arguments to personnel and exchange. Offline, I've exchanged with officials from both sides and, at least one politician on the side. Well, let me not talk about that. So what I'm saying in short is, I really think this is not necessary, this debate. I mean, we can have the debate, but I mean, I really don't agree with the position expressed by Mr. Ryder. Most certainly not. I would imagine most in the ANC, like Mr. Comrade MPC, will not agree. We don't want to encourage this inequality within our country. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Karim. Before we get a response from National Treasury, can we check again for any further hands, Babalo? Any further hands, Babalo?
No, Chetison, no further
hands. Okay. Okay, then National Treasury, can you give us the last response?
Thank you, Chairperson. Jan will open up with a response with regard to the non-collection of municipal revenues by municipalities and what needs to be done in that regard, and also further information on the incident registers and ensuring that money gets spent correctly on the local government equitable share. And Emmanuel Pillay will give more information on the grants given to provinces and what has been done to ensure that the money spent for the purpose it's allocated for. So Jan, over to you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, and the questions from the members. So Chair, perhaps I can just add that slide 12 and 13 is a direct outcome of a session we've had with the Budget Council Lekgotla, as well as the Budget Forum Lekgotla. So those two slides, Chair, is a outcome of a decision that took place. On that date, the 31st of August, the Minister of Finance also issued a press release, and we can perhaps also share that with the members via the Secretariat. Chair, with regard to the issues and the points raised by the Honourable Member from Gauteng Province, I would advise that we also share with the members the State of Local Government report that we do once a year, as well as the report we do for Parliament on over and under expenditure. So in those reports, we provide extensive detail on the underlying challenges that we're trying to resolve in the space of our municipalities. But Chair, if I have to summarize it, at the heart of the challenges on revenue collection is the ownership control issue. The fact that and the Department of Public Works is helping us, Chair, to try and unpack this challenge, because if your property is not correctly registered in the deeds office and a municipality sends you a bill and you're not the owner of that property, that is the real challenge that we're trying to resolve, Chair. Obviously, the second part is the effort by municipalities to collect what is legitimately belonging to them. And this is where I think the Division of Revenue is trying to deal with those municipalities that have challenges that do not necessarily have a proper revenue base. That's the redistribution part that Wendy and the team is talking about, Chair. Yeah, I think that's the first part that I can deal with. Wendy, I'll come back if there's something that I've missed on the other parts. So the revenue strategy or the revenue improvement program, Chair, that my colleague has referred to, the integrated revenue strategy that we have developed between ourselves and COCTA, is essentially the vehicle, Chair, that we want to use to create the awareness, to capacitate municipalities, placing advisors that understand this area of work in the space of our provincial treasuries, and then progressively help the municipalities to really get their systems and part of the MSCOA reform, Chair, we've also made sure that the systems that's in the space of municipality can now properly generate billing. So that's the area of work, Chair, as a basket that we're offering. And as the process unfolds, we'll be in a position to come back to the committee, Chair, from time to time to then share the challenges and what we have managed to resolve. It's unfortunate, not a simple task. The fact that we have accumulated the debtors book to the extent where it is now is part of the problem. We're also working very closely, Chair, with ESCOM and that team to understand how we can help each other. But at the heart of all our challenges is a funded budget, Chair. Thank you very much.
Yeah, Wendy, just before you finish your allocations of the questions, I just want to put in this one that I nearly forget to raise, is the issue of the NSFAS, the formulas or challenges for the current situation which are there now. Can you just say something also on that so that we finish all the responses? Thank you.
Thank you very much. If I can just add to the response that Jan gave with regard to revenue collection and also the point raised by Honourable Ryder regarding municipalities needing to have proper indigency registers in place and that they shouldn't be collecting tariffs and from the indigent is indeed a very important point, and it is something that requires consideration by municipalities to have proper indigency registers in place. And it's what needs to be done is the municipality, when they actually provide free basic services in the budget reforms that's been introduced and the MSCOA reports, there's a line that says there are no revenue forgone due to these subsidies given. So we can monitor also how much municipalities are actually giving in subsidies and the like. So that is a very important point that has been made, and that there's definitely further work needed by municipalities to improve the indigency registers. If I can then hand over to Emmanuel Pillay to deal with the question about the provincial grant performance. And Mampu, if I can ask you to deal with the NSFAS issue. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair, and thank you for this opportunity. So in terms of the provincial grant performance, so we have over 100 billion rand over the past few years going to national to provincial departments in the form of direct grants to provinces for the various sectors. So over the few years past, there's been an average spending of around between 95% to 98% in terms of the allocations that have been made as direct conditional grants. So part of the underspending on those grants actually rolled over to the next financial year. So it's not really that the entire 5% underspend is returned to the National Revenue Fund. A large part of it is actually rolled over. So what we found in terms of, while expenditure might look good in some instances, we find that there is a disjuncture between spending and actual performance when you look at the performance of the outputs that are listed in the framework and the business plans. And this was highlighted to a presentation we made in October to the committee, where we highlighted the disjuncture between performance and expenditure as such. But we do engage regularly with the national departments responsible for those grants. We met last week with the Department of Health, and we looked at conditional grant performance over the third quarter. So we meet with them on a quarterly basis to understand what's causing the disjunction in performance. Provinces are required to report to us on a quarterly basis 45 days after the end of each quarter in terms of what the performance was. They also need to explain why they deviated from targets, and also explain remedial measures in terms of improving performance as well. So it's an ongoing engagement that we have with the province, with the provinces and national departments in terms of improving performance. But there's generally performance spending is good, but we do tend to see some issues in terms of correlation between performance and expenditure. Although it's not all the grants, it's just a few of them. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. With respect to the NSFAS, the team that is here today is a team that is responsible for the Division of Revenue Bill. The team that is responsible for appropriation will be coming to Parliament to present on these matters. We're just waiting for to be given the date by Parliament. And when we do get the date, the team will come and present on the allocations of national departments and the appropriation bill, and therefore we'll deal with the funding issues in NSFAS. Thank you.
Thank you, Doc.
Thank you, Chairperson. We're done.
Thank you very, very much. I think we have come to the end of this meeting, whereby I want to thank Team National Treasury. I think it was very comprehensive presentations and reports, and some was very detailed and it's greatly appreciated that one gets some detailed reports and very clear, straight to the point, so that to curb or to avoid too many questions. But I think the questions that was raised was valuable questions, and we want to thank all the members for their contribution and questions raised, and also to thank the provinces who are here, because it is indeed for provinces to be informed, so that when provinces are going to discuss their provincial mandates, that provinces have a full informed in terms of their provincial mandates. So I think in also to thank the administration of the committee for the work well done. And then I think we have come to the end of this meeting, and then the meeting is then adjourned. Thank you very much.
Well done, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Rider.